Hello, beautiful beings. Welcome to the True Nature Podcast. I'm Taj Savitri, your host, mentor for spiritual entrepreneurs and intuitive healer. In this podcast, we explore all things expansion, psychedelics, consciousness, and spirituality. Here you will find transmissions from the world's leading healers and guides. And my hope is that you leave feeling more happy, abundant, and empowered by your life. Most importantly, inspired to live in the fullest, most unique expression that is you. By the laws of nature, when you expand as an individual, when you grow, heal, and prosper, your external world, this planet, and the humans on it greatly benefit. They grow, heal, and prosper because of you. That means we all matter. We all contribute to the growing presence of peace and harmony on this planet. Welcome home to your true nature. Hello, everybody. Taj here with a very special guest today. All of my guests are special. I always start by like celebrating everybody because I'm always just so excited about all the guests that I invite here. And today's guest is actually the producer of the intro and the outro music, which has its own special essence and energy. And so that's why I wanted Madhu Anzi Ani. Did I say that right, Madhu?
Madhu Anziani.
Okay, I was close. Who is a sound healing artist and ceremonialist. He's a sanctioned teacher of the Pachakuti Mesa tradition. So he's the guest today, and I'm just so excited to share his story because he as a person is really fascinating. He was paralyzed at one point, and he was able to heal himself. So really, really much about the embodiment of tapping into our true nature as powerful healers and being able to heal ourselves. So Madhu, please say hello to everybody. Share with us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Taj. Thank you so much for this interview. Right now I'm in Oakland, California. This is the place where I was born. And I find it to be a very powerful thing to be living in the place where I was born, in the midst of all the different types of spiritual awakening experience that I have, the place of origin of a being is so important to have a relationship to. So I feel very fortunate that I'm speaking to you today from where I was born in Oakland. Mm.
That's so awesome. So Madhu, I know that you're on the spiritual path, and I can hear it in the music. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about your awakening and even about your story being paralyzed, because I'm sure that had a bit to do with the work that you're doing now in the world with sound healing and the tradition that you're studying, right?
Oh, yes. Well, it starts from a young age. I was blessed to have a grandmother that was very spiritually inclined. From as early as I remember, she would speak to me about death and reincarnation and reassure me that when the time comes for her passing, that I shouldn't worry and I shouldn't cry, because she's always been with me and she will always continue to be with me, and that we have lived many, many, many times. And she told me this every visit, pretty much, when I would see her. And she was in perfect health, so I was always kind of like, why are you telling me this? But she was imprinting me at a young age to have this awareness. And I realize now, looking back, that I had a special grandmother. A lot of people don't receive those types of teachings at a young age. So I grew up around these concepts, and that fed me. She was a meditator, and I got to witness the type of grace that would be infused in her life. And she inspired me to learn how to meditate. When I was in high school is when I asked her to show me what she does, how to meditate. And she sat me down on her couch. We sat side by side and we held hands, and she put on a guided cassette tape, which instructed us to breathe and continuously focus on the breath. And I look back on that experience, and it was so powerful to simply hold my grandmother's hand, relax the body and mind and breathe, and to feel the depth of her practice, because she would instantly drop in to that space of no time. And that was one of my first spiritual experiences that was practical. You know, it fed the rest of my journey to have that reference point. And the time finally came when she left this world. I could probably do a whole podcast about that experience, because I was with her the 3 days leading up to her passing, which was what I consider to be a high level crossover. I witnessed somebody that developed a lot of mastery through the meditation and had a beautiful exit. And when she left this world, it accelerated my path in a way, because of all that she talked about, all that she had prepared me for. And I wonder.
It sounds like all the transmissions that you were receiving from her, all the wisdom.
Yes. Yeah, she was really my first teacher. And I did experience an accelerated spiritual growth once she passed. And I was always curious, how is she going to show up now on the other side of the veil? Because she always told me she would. And these things are subtle. You know, I was always curious how it would show up, but they're almost unspeakable. But one who goes through experiences, they know. We just know when spirit is at play. And I can only speak to it so much. But soon after, a couple years after her passing, I was studying music in school at the San Francisco State University. I was studying jazz and world music, playing guitar, and music is my life, always has been. It's been part of my spiritual practice in a big way, listening to a lot of different world traditions. And I became very interested in vibration, how sound impacts our consciousness, how it can take us to other dimensions. And I was studying jazz and world music, but really I got interested in how can music deepen my meditation practice? How can I change my consciousness through sound? How can I create beautiful meditative pieces of music? And in that exploration, I was doing a lot of searches for sound healing and discovering people like Jonathan Goldman.
You know, Jonathan Goldman.
You know him, yes.
I don't know him personally, but I was considering studying with him for mediumship.
Wow, mediumship.
Because he has a school for mediumship.
That's interesting. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he's a medium. But I've heard his music, so wow, it's such a small world. Okay, continue.
Yeah, he had a big impact in my journey with music, with sound healing, and my own recovery process as well. So names like Tom Kenyon, Dr. Jeffrey Thompson. I got into binaural beats. Kelly Howell, another wonderful producer of the binaural beat programs. And I was able to go into deeper states of meditation through these listening programs, listening to theta waves. My memory increased notably, because I always had a hard time memorizing things for school. And I noticed my memory drastically increased when I listened to these programs. So I became a better student, and meditation was more profound, and synchronicities became the norm in my life. And I wanted to share this with everybody. But you know, everybody's got to be in their own timing with deepening into practices like that. So I was kind of on my own and having profound experiences and just feeling so connected to life, so connected to nature, and feeling that everything is intelligent design and there is a purpose, and meditation is the key and vibration is a key.
Beautiful. So I've been, it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about sound and vibration, and in my spiritual practice this morning, sometimes I give myself permission when I'm feeling density in my body or anything that just feels like it needs to move. I just start using my voice to drop deeper. So I felt like I needed to be more grounded. So I was making like deeper sounds, and that helped. Yeah. It's helping to move and to break up that energy. And then I chant it with Kundalini yoga meditation and how we tune in and tune out. And part of my study was when you speak, where in your body can you feel that? So like ma, that'll be more like in your heart. And of course, like the higher pitches are going to be more in the head. And I noticed that since you're a singer, I'm a singer as well. My channel for singing is more open when I'm in my heart. And my voice is more open, and I receive songs when I'm more in my heart. And that's been the case in ceremonies. And I've even tested it while I've been like super high in ceremony. I'm like, okay, what if I'm like super in my head? And it's just, it's more staticky. It's unclear. It's higher pitched. It's not as open. And I'm curious if you've noticed that for yourself as well, being a singer and an artist, just that relationship and that having that awareness around that.
Yes. Life flows much better when we're accessing our heart, and vibration is such a direct path to enter into one's heart through a sound, through a simple vibration like a ma. As you mentioned, it's for me, it's the most efficient way. We can read the teachings, we can speak the language of the heart, but really it just comes down to the feeling, the felt sense vibration, and repeating it over and over again. Of all the practices I've found, it's the most direct route into the heart, and then everything else can flow from there.
Yeah, and it feels good. One thing that I've been learning for myself is about the Taurus field. So how we actually, and this has a bit to do with manifestation and the hologram of which we experience, that we create from the heart. And when we create from the heart, that's actually, we pick up more in our field that is of love and that is of the manifestation and what it is that we desire, because that's what we're broadcasting. And we essentially pick up that vibration and we experience more of it. So it's this really beautiful, beautiful flow. So I've been learning that, for myself, when I'm not in my heart and in my head, I think a lot of what we experience as human beings is like that balance between like learning and the logic and needing to be in the head and in study, and then coming back to our heart and being able to balance the both. Because we can speak from the heart. We can even, I feel like, learn from the heart as well. And I'm curious how, you know, you have been a student, and it sounds like you're still a bit of a student in a lot of ways. I think we all are. How that study between, the head and the heart, knowing a lot about meditation and music and vibration, how has that affected you?
Well, the first thing that I was seeing as you were speaking about the heart is a wonderful visual that I've seen in a book called Your Sacred Anatomy. But Desda Zuckerman, it has the most detailed visual art of the human energy field, the subtle anatomy. And I constantly reference this as a visual aid to when we talk about like what it's like to be in the heart, to have these images to see the energy field, like you mentioned, the toroidal field.
Yeah, you nailed it. I've been having a hard time saying it recently.
Toroidal? Is it toroidal or toroidal? I don't know.
It's Taurus for short, and I can hang with that. But yes, it helps to see the visuals.
The visual is what matters. It helps gives a reference point to see the heart as like this center point. Mm-hmm. And I like to think of the central channel that runs through mm-hmm. the body from, mm-hmm. you know, at least 15 feet above the head down through the body to 15 feet below the feet. And feeling the heart as the center point gives one a greater sense of, you know, we're more than just a body. And there's this communication that's happening all the time by the way we're breathing, by the way we're holding our posture. If we're smiling or not, that informs subtle energy, which is profound energy, which shapes so much of our experience and our existence. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're talking about sound and the heart, I always like to begin by orienting myself to the spaciousness beneath me and connecting to the earth, mm-hmm. The place where I'm situated. So I'm connecting to the land. I'm connecting to all the life that has existed on this land leading up till now, and meeting it in gratitude. And feeling my roots go down, even connecting all the way down to the center of the earth, the center of the planet Earth beneath me. And from there, I feel my heart and my heart's connection to the below. And then I do the same thing above my head. I sense my crown open and expand up to the sky and into the stars. And the fact is there's trillions of stars in the galaxy that we are connected to right now. And as soon as the awareness goes there, it's like a reality check. That's what is, that's what's happening now. And then I allow this starlight to flow down into me through my crown and arrive in my heart, meeting with the earth energy below. So the heart is like this meeting place. And then from that place, any sound I make, any sensation I have, it's connected to the greater whole of what I am.
That's so beautiful. When I think of, this is just like a silly thought that came to mind. When I think about our heart being the center point, connecting the above and the below, I think of like the trolls with the little diamond in their bellies.
Oh, like the cartoons?
Yeah, you know, like the little troll toys, like
trolleys.
Yeah, the trolleys.
I remember them.
We all have our little diamond hearts. I mean, but theirs were in their bellies. So that was the visual that came to mind. I was like, oh, we're all like little trolls.
We are in a way. Yeah. Those are based on, something. There's a lot to the trolleys.
Is there? I'm gonna have to look that up. I'm sure there's some.
Look up the Menehune, little people, the Wedeme. There's names in for these little beings in world traditions all over the planet. The little people, they're the caretakers of nature, and they're one of our many unseen allies.
Oh, that's so cool.
The trolleys is like a cartoon character, but they're real. You know, they're acknowledged in many cultures around the world as helpers.
So maybe their presence is here, and that's why it came to my mind. I was like,
I'm glad you mentioned them.
Yeah, totally. So I want to hear, so one thing I want to say is I want to mention the music for the intro and the outro of the podcast. Maru, you and I have been in contact and communication and trying to get the flow of the music going. And one thing that I want to share with the listeners is that everything on this podcast is so intentional. It's my creation, and I'm birthing this really beautiful creation. And one thing I was explaining to Maru is I had a lot of resistance around it last year. When it came to me, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's quite comfortable for me to share my voice in that way, just because there was a lot of work that I needed to do around my throat chakra. And I'm still like, even as I'm speaking about this, there's a little bit of a charge for me just because I'm still working through it. And the only way to work through it is to just move through it. Mm-hmm. And And I've just kept getting called to do this podcast. And the way that it's come together has been so beautiful, from the cover art being made by an ayahuasca artist, a woman who goes out to work with all these indigenous cultures to study medicines. And I was on a road trip from Portland to Joshua Tree. And again, everything in life is just so synchronistic and beautiful. And it just shows that we're always being supported when we experience these synchronicities. And I was on a road trip from Portland to Joshua Tree. For whatever reason, I was like, I need to go to Joshua Tree. I need to be in Joshua Tree. Very similar to you. I was born about an hour from Joshua Tree. So I feel like as though I grew up in a vortex, and I've had a lot of crazy experiences. That'll have to be like a whole podcast. But I was making my way down to Joshua Tree, and we stopped by a friend's house, brother Brian, who you know. Mm-hmm. And I met him at Burning Man. And so my partner and I stopped by his house, this beautiful property off the grid, just really beautiful, quiet space in California. And we're sitting there hanging out with him. We just served ourselves hape, and he turns on this music. And I was like, dude, what is this? I was like, this is so good. I can't believe I haven't heard it, like, on Spotify and on the radio. And my partner's like, yeah, what is this? And he's like, oh, these are my friends. They will sometimes play in ceremony. And yeah, they're really close friends of mine. And at that time, I had just listened to my old intro, outro music, and I didn't quite resonate with it because it was from, I had selected it last year, and it was like, you know, you go find it on Audio Jungle. I was like, this does not feel right for what I'm going for. And so I was like, I would really love to connect to these people and see if I can use their music for the intro and the outro of the podcast. And so Maru and I connected, and I connected with his friend, Alexander. Is it Alexander? Yeah.
Yes, Alexander Kugler.
Alexander Kugler. And just seeing how I could support you guys and your music, and how you guys can support me and my mission, and just having just the most intention and love being brought into this space, because this is a sacred space for me and for others to share their medicine and to just go really deep into the truth of what it is that we're experiencing. And so Maru has been working with me, or had been working with me. I think by the time you listen to this podcast, you should have heard an intro, and you'll probably hear an outro of it all beautifully put together, but that's his music. And what's so special and so beautiful about it, and of course I was drawn to it, is that this song was channeled, right? For your mother.
Yeah, the song was, so much of my music is inspired by my mom. It just turns out she's always been an inspiration and someone who's always listened to my music. And it was at a time when she needed healing desperately after suffering a stroke, the type of recovery she was needing. I was aware that she needed a spark of fire and courage and a strong energy. So this ties into the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, a Peruvian-based shamanic lineage that I've apprenticed in, and now I'm a sanctioned teacher of. In the Peruvian cosmology, the Puma plays a significant role in this world, this dimension, known as the Kaipacha, the world of the five senses that we're experiencing now. And through the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, the Puma is linked with the element of fire. And with that intention for my mother's healing, I realized that I wanted to bring a song to her while she was in the hospital that conveyed the energy of fire and Puma. And the fire and Puma is also associated with the clarity of the mind, our higher mind, the mind that attains wisdom beyond our intellect. So in the song, you hear spoken or sung in the chorus, Puma transforma y cura a toda mi gente, libera nuestra mente. So Puma, transform and cure all of my people. Puma, liberate our mind. And that becomes the hook, the chorus that's sung over and over. And it's the way that it's sung, Puma, Puma. It's like I was trying to wake up that energy in my mom. So now it's become this medicine song. It's sung in ceremonies and people get lifted by it. And you know, it's funny for me because it's, I love seeing the impact that it has on community. And really, it started at home. It started for my mom.
No, thank you for sharing that. I'm like tearing up over here because it's so beautiful and I can feel that. I feel music so deeply. And yeah, when I heard that, I was like, this is a calling. It's a calling of sorts. Like there's so much power and there's so much hope in it as well. And I've never worked with Puma medicine, the cat medicine, mostly Jaguar spirit has been coming to me more so recently. I was just in the Amazon forest working with the Kuntanawa tribe and sitting in ceremony and doing dieta for 10 days. And they had a jaguar that was by their house that would come and visit. I didn't see it at the time. And then I went to Mexico and they work with the jaguar spirit there as well. It's very prominent. And so I was receiving a lot of cat medicine, but it was very terrifying for me at first because they're big cats. They're scary, but they also have a lot of force and a lot of power. And that's something I can feel from the Puma as well. Just that fire, that force, that, yeah. So it's so beautiful that, that you created that for your mother. And, I think there's something to be said about, again, creating from the heart, right? And what a beautiful creation that was manifested from that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The devotion to family. That's also been a big part of my life, is having a supportive family. Just knowing that, you know, at the foundation, I have such a loving family. That's a big part of being able to traverse the path of awakening, is having a supportive family.
Mm. So how did you get into the Pachacuti Mesa tradition?
Well, that...
Is that part of your lineage, or how were you introduced to that? And what is that? Because it's not, I mean, I've heard of, there's so many different traditions and so many different paths. And I'm curious what that even is. Like, what's the study of that?
Yeah, it's a study of, it takes a cross-cultural lens to shamanism and healing. It is a system of healing or curanderismo that blends two different lineages from Peru, one from the northern coast in the Huachumero, Huachuma lineages, working with the sacred plant medicine known as Huachuma, or here it's called San Pedro. And this lineage is also known as Camasquero, working with the healing powers of nature. And this lineage, thousands of year old lineage, still exists today. And my teacher, whose name is Don Oscar Miro Quesada, studied with a Camasca curandero, Huachumero, named Don Celso, in the northern coast of Peru. And he went through a mentorship of 13 years with him and was given the instruction to bring these teachings to North America. And before coming to North America, Don Oscar also studied with a teacher named Don Benito Curiwaman Vargas, a famed Paco. The Pacocuna lineage comes from the high Andean mountain ranges of Peru. They work with the coca leaf in prayer, and in divination, and they are masters of earth-honoring rituals known as haiwarikui, or in Spanish they're called despacho, a beautiful, organized mandala-like offerings that are offered to the mountains, they're offered to the land for the benefit of community. Mm-hmm. Their livelihood depends on reciprocity, or it's called Aini in the language that is spoken in the Andes, Quechua. Aini is the foundation of life, the law of right returns or sacred reciprocity. That is the background of the Pachacuti Mesa lineage, which I learned in later in life, in my 20s, my late 20s. I didn't grow up with that lineage. I grew up, my mother is Jewish, and my father was born in Puerto Rico. So I grew up in a bicultural home, which allowed me to be exposed to an eclectic upbringing and gave me some sort of a freedom to explore myself culturally and spiritually.
I can totally relate to that. My mom is Mexican, Mexican Spanish, and I'm just going to say my dad is white, European, so French, Irish, Dutch, and it's really nice to grow up in having, like, for you, feels like extreme, right? To have one parent be Jewish and the other come from a Latin culture. And I can feel like that's probably where, like, your connection to music is. Because for me, like, since I was a little girl, my mom would always be dancing and singing in front of, like, MTV. And at the time, it was, like, 90s, 80s, like, hip-hop. But then my grandmother, she was in like salsa dancing competitions and always singing in Spanish. And so I think that's where like my love for music came in. I mean, I also come from a line of healers as well, so I think it's it just kind of gets passed on. It's in the blood.
Yeah, I agree, it's in the blood. You know, people say that, and
it really is. It's in the blood. It's like, I can't help, but like, I love drums. I'm so connected to drums. And it also connects me to my wild, like, you know, the tree and the animal and just that beat that when you hear a drum, like when you're in ceremony or when you're at, you know, a circle where people are like playing music and you have the maracas and the guitar. And then all of a sudden somebody plays the drum. It's like, it's on. It lifts everybody up. And that's what they play the drum and they sing in tribes to help people with depression, and they dance. And so the drum is what we can dance to.
Oh yeah. The drum. And I feel very fortunate for my background and my upbringing, being able to hear, you know, syncopated rhythms, very rhythmic music. Helps the body, helps fine tune the body and one's ear. At least that's my experience. And you know, it's also the heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. That's
everybody,
what it is.
Everybody has been in the womb and has heard the heartbeat from mom.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
that steady heartbeat can bring anybody home.
My mediumship is kicking in a little bit. One thing I noticed in ceremony, because I'm in shamanic study, it's a different path. Mine is just, it's very open and it's with myself. I've asked for teachers to come, and the teacher that comes is me. And so it's been a very interesting study navigating that myself. One thing that I've noticed is how music and ceremony, it could be ayahuasca, it could be San Pedro, it could be, you know, psilocybin mushrooms, whatever, is that music helps navigate the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps move the energy in the room. And it was really interesting when I was in ceremony and I was, when the Icaros were being sung and songs were being sung in the ceremony, and I was like watching, I was like, oh my God, the music is moving. And I could see how like certain pitches or certain instruments that just the combination of the both were just facilitating on their own. And I'm curious about your experience in that, because it sounds like you do work with the medicines, and specifically the one that's connected to the tradition that you're studying. But I'm curious about your experience of that, like if you have any similar experiences with being able to I guess help move the medicine and the energy in the room with music.
Well,
that's like a pretty like heavy, not heavy question, but like there's a lot to it.
Yeah, and I don't often get to speak to what my experience is in those realms.
I'm trying to ask it on like a very like tangible level, because it's a very metaphysical thing to be able to see energy move by using instruments, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, and it's really like about being a vessel.
Yeah.
Being an instrument. So I've gotten really good at just getting out of the way. And that started as my, you know, as early as I started playing music, I've always improvised. Mm-hmm. I've always felt in my body what is supposed to happen next. And I've always been this being able to compose music on the spot. So I'm a very spontaneous creator, and I just let go. And I know I do have songs that I've composed, of course. Typically, I never play the same way twice. It's just like the moment of feeling. I'm always sensitive to what does the room need, or what does my body need? Does mm-hmm. it need to, I play a lot with dynamics. Mm-hmm. I learned at a certain point how dynamics are very important, but you know, between the difference between loud and soft.
Oh, that's so true.
Spirits really like dynamics. And bring it down like really quiet, you know, and you know, this is something that you can't really do if you have just like recorded music playing in ceremony space. It's always just at the same volume, and it's not present to the moment. A human being can be present to the moment and appease the spirit worlds by creating music that's very dynamic and responsive. So I'll feel in my body, you know, when it's time to bring up the energy, or when it's time to make it really soft, and when it's time to have silence. You know, the subtlety is something that I respond to when I'm in those spaces. Mm-hmm. So it requires a great deal of listening. And being just very sensitive to the subtle energies and the sensitive place that the fellow journeyers are going through, you know, I don't try too much to guide or influence their journey too much. I just want to be like, you know, one of my friends calls me the whale. Like people get in my whale, like I take people in the whale belly. And they're all in Madhu's big whale belly, and they just go for the ride. So I'm very aware, like, okay, I'm this big whale, and I'm taking people on a journey, and I want to be very sensitive and, you know, let people have a profound experience, but, you know, let there be a gentleness as we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that very similarly to you. It's whether you're like walking into a room or you're in ceremony or walking into a space, you would say like an office space or a gathering. It's just taking a moment to listen and to feel into the room, not trying to influence anything really. But just listening to what's needed. And that doesn't even have to be with music. It's like, oh, I feel like, it feels heavy in here. Maybe we need to light a candle or a light incense. And so I'm always burning candles and incense, not saying that, you know, where I hang out is really heavy, but sometimes, you know, there might be like a heavy conversation going on and there's a candle needed to hold space.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So it's really cool to hear about your experience in that. I don't think I've actually ever voiced how I relate to music in ceremony. And now, like, even when I relate to it in the day-to-day, it's different because of how I've experienced it in ceremony. And, you know, going back to, there was a lot of stuff that I've had to work through and still working through with my expression and my throat chakra. I used to sing all the time when I was younger, and I would have like these pretend concerts, and I would get up on stage with my little keyboard and I was like, yeah, we're performing. And then when I was in high school, you know, a lot happens in high school. There's a lot of insecurity and judgment. So I had a lot of things projected onto me, and I felt like it was wrong to express myself. And so it wasn't until I was in ceremony, I realized the beauty and the power of expression. And there have been times where I've been in ceremony and someone's singing next to me and it's really off pitch. And it's, I'm like, okay, this is a lot for me right now. And also, if we just switch the lens, I was able to see how that, even though it wasn't like pleasing, what it's something I would listen to every day on my own, it was actually the perfect thing I needed to experience in that moment to keep me grounded, or to keep me in the space. And so finding appreciation for the sounds that may not always be the most quote unquote pleasant to our ears, right? Finding appreciation for the things that are more foreign to us.
Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, that seems to be part of the equation of life. It's like making peace with what is, no matter what, in spite of whatever it is that's going on. How deep is your love? Can you love it?
There's a song like that, like, how deep is your love? All these songs, all these quotes, there's a lot of truth. Yeah,
that's
too.
That's a hit. But that line, I quote that line often, because that's been a guiding phrase for me to keep myself in check.
When we want to judge, right? Because you can find yourself, we just judge a lot. We're so programmed to judge. And I, one thing I explained to a lot of the women and the people that I mentor is, what if you got curious about it? This is judgmental. What if you're just like, huh, that's interesting. I wonder what it is about their life, or about them, that would have them act in that way, or sing in that way, or not sing, or, you know, do or not do. And I've found so much peace in my life by being more curious versus judgmental. And I have also noticed when, say for instance, that situation where I was like, oh, that's not something I would want to listen to every day. But when I notice when I judge that outside of me, I'm also judging myself more. And when I judge myself more, I'm judging that which is outside of me more. It's that reflection. And that doesn't even just have to be for judgment, right? It could be in relation to anger. The angry you are at someone outside, you know, someone outside of you, or someone you're relating to, what anger is within you that has not yet been expressed? Mm-hmm. Or what are you angry with yourself about?
Yes. Yes, turning that mirror around. That's the wisdom approach.
That is the wisdom approach. And it's not always easy. It's not always easy, because, you know, there's we're so human. We're, what's been coming up for me a lot recently is the unlearning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the unwinding. Mm-hmm. Unwinding the mind. You remind me of a line in one of the new songs that it will be released in February. I have an album coming out February 22nd.
Yes.
With my one of my other dear soul brothers, Egemin Sanli. It's from this book called The Radiant Sutras, which is based on an old Sanskrit text called the Vijnana Bhairava Tantras. It was translated into English by the author Lauren Roche, and the stanzas are so beautiful. And what you're speaking to is exactly one of the stanzas about those times when we feel powerless. This stanza suggests that we unwind our mind, get curious, look around your insides with wonder. And it's like, to have these tools, it's so necessary to have tools, to have guidance, to know, like, oh, I can have a point of reference that's not projecting outward. I can actually go inward, feel what's happening inside, and learn about what that sensation is. And maybe if I can relax that sensation, maybe that's a virtuous thing to do. Maybe that is the great healing that's needed upon this world and all of our relations, because maybe that's a really old pattern. Maybe it's something that got passed down from long before us, and we're the ones that can transform it and equalize it so that, you know, we be in that place. In Buddhism, it's called equanimity. That's where we can just sit with a smile and just be witness to this miracle of a creation. You know, why do we have to forget that? We get our feathers ruffled so easy sometimes. So the last stanza, the last piece of that stanza says, "The one with a capital O, the one who has always been, has seen so much worse than this. And the one is still here." So this is from a song. I'm excited about this one coming out in February. Songs that are based on the Radiance Sutra's poetry.
So it sounds like you draw a lot of inspiration from the books you read, and I can also hear from nature. You connect to nature and you bring that out in your music. And is that true? Or are there other places that you draw inspiration from when it comes to creating music?
I find that when I'm in nature, I receive a lot of melodies.
That's the same for me too. Yeah.
Yeah, effortlessly. If I go by water, you know, as soon as I just get into that rhythm of walking or just sitting and listening in my inner ear, I'll start to hear a melody.
Because nature is always speaking and sharing its own songs with us. We're just receiving if we're listening.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of inspiration, different world traditions that I've studied in, you know, I've named the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, the Peruvian-based shamanic lineage, and there's so many teachings and virtues of day-to-day living that are expressed in that tradition. That's one of my inspirations. Tibetan Buddhism. I've studied a lot of chanting in the Tibetan form, which is rhythmic. And mantras in Tibetan, as well as in Sanskrit, in Hindu lineages. I think a lot of my inspiration comes from these intonations that come from ancient languages, which access different parts of our brain, different parts of our psyche, different parts of our nervous system are unleashed just through the vibration of these sounds. So I feel like I'm a forever student of vibration. I'm always desiring to intone different sounds that I have not made before and to feel what it does in my body. I feel like there are all these doorways. There's all these different keys that can be unlocked by the way we use our tongue, by the way the tongue touches the upper palate, and then the vowels and the consonants and the way that they flow into one another. I feel like they act as these doorways. So, and then even in the Jewish tradition, in the Hebrew songs that I grew up hearing and singing, there's a lot of inspiration there as well.
I love what you were just talking about, the doorways. Life is really interesting when you can see that there are so many different doorways to different parts of yourself. And we all want to understand life. Like, why are we here? What are we doing? What's the purpose? I feel as though it is to listen and to find these doorways. Because for myself, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain this. Say I listen to a song and then I feel something different in my body. Like, I was listening to a song the other day and I was dancing in the mirror and I was getting really into my wild and I was working with the cat energy and my body started tingling. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to be with this. This is like, I still have these moments where I'm like, I've been in so many ceremonies and I've experienced so many things and I've like interacted with so many different beings. Like I still have these moments where I'm like, this is fucking weird. Like this is still really weird. Like that human part of me is like, this is a weird experience. Right. And I was, just really feeling what was going on with my body. And I started to feel myself go somewhere to like retrieve knowledge, to retrieve information. And I feel like when we access these different doorways, if we're deeply present with the experiences and the sensations and the sounds, whether it's nature or songs or what someone is speaking to us, we're retrieving more information about ourselves. We're getting to know ourselves on a deeper level, and we're getting to know why we exist on a deeper level.
Beautifully said.
Okay. I was like, I think I said that right. Sometimes it's hard to explain these like higher level things. And I'm still like integrating so much, you know, as you navigate these different realms and access different dimensions, some of it you can't put into words.
Yeah. The English language I find to be a limitation.
Totally.
Vibrationally. The root language of English is Sanskrit. English is an Indo-European language. Indo, coming from India, meaning Sanskrit. And the Sanskrit alphabet has more letters, more sounds. So English is limited. We don't get the vibrational quality. And to me, English is like a descriptive language. Like it's describing stuff, but it's not the actual thing itself.
The feeling and the depth is what I feel. Because when I sing in Sanskrit, when I'm chanting, I feel so much more. And one, I guess you could say word, means so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Multiple meanings. And also when you intone the word in Sanskrit, it's hitting these, not just the chakras, but what are called nadis. Mm-hmm. 72,000 nadis in the body, these channels of energy. And we can, you know, if we're just speaking in English, for only speaking in English, vibrationally, we're missing out on a lot of channels that can be accessed by pronunciation in an ancient language such as Sanskrit.
The pronunciation. And I was finding the projection, the power behind saying it, to not passively chant, right? Because I think we do a lot of things habitually and passively. And I found when I'm chanting and I start going off somewhere, I'm like, to-do list, I got to do this after I finish chanting. And I'll start actually saying what it is that I'm thinking about, and I'm not chanting anymore. And it's so disruptive. And then when I can get back into putting my life force and my energy behind it, that's when I get into that really beautiful flow of like everything and beauty and like tapping into the feeling of what it is that I'm basically calling in by chanting that.
That's the essence of mantra. Chanting, having that as a tool to come back home to.
Totally. So we didn't touch on this. So I wanna touch on it just because I love Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'm sure you've maybe heard of him.
No? Mm-hmm. I've come across him. Yes.
Yeah. His work is really, really beautiful. A little bit about his background is, and you know, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but he was a chiropractor. Once you're a chiropractor, I'm sure you're always a chiropractor. You have that information and that knowledge. And he got into an accident where he became paralyzed because he, I think, broke some parts of his spine. And he went into deep meditation and was able to access the quantum field or oneness and everything and nothing at the same time. And in that space, he was able to fix his spine through visualization, and he came out of it, and his spine on its own started to repair itself. And when I heard that story, and when I just even hear him speak, and I listen to his audiobooks, I've seen him in person as well because I wanted to be in his field. It just really, it was a little disruptive I think there have been a lot of things that have been disruptive when it challenges the way that I used to view or relate to life. But hearing about that, that we can go into this space where we can create, right? And a lot of what I've been integrating is creating from the quantum field, from that space of bliss, love, everything, creation. And so I want to hear a bit about your experience of becoming paralyzed and being able to essentially do what he had done in your own way through your own intuition and be able to heal yourself.
Yeah. Well, the healing that I've experienced came after having a surgery to fuse my spine, to fuse 8 vertebrae together, which I still have in my spine. It's not very comfortable to live with metal in the spine. And it constantly humbles me to live with somewhat of an obstacle inside of the body, yet it's my teacher. It reminds me of gratitude. I might take life for granted more frequently if it wasn't for the metal in my spine.
That's just such a beautiful, beautiful perspective to be able to go into that place where most might think it's an inconvenience, but you see it as a constant reminder to be grateful.
Yeah, I mean, I have tears in my eyes thinking about it, because when a person is stripped from the basic needs, like basic abilities, you know, walking, of course, or even just like holding a pen or a pencil or a fork, like we would never even think or even be able to imagine what that's like. And to have had to work through that and to achieve going beyond the condition I was in as a quadriplegic or tetraplegic, which is having all 4 limbs paralyzed. Not only was I paralyzed, but I was unable to breathe. I was on a respirator, on a breathing machine. This is after an injury that I fell from 2 stories high and I shattered 2 vertebrae in my neck, C5 and C7. And doctors thought that I was not going to be able to have a normal life. I was being prepared to just live a life in a wheelchair. And in the spinal cord rehab facility in Santa Clara Valley, I was being taught how to live a life as a functional quadriplegic person. Yet I was having visions and knowings that I was going to heal, that I was going to walk out of the hospital. And several months prior to my injury, I had my first experience with Reiki healing. When I was attending San Francisco State University studying music, I was also taking holistic health classes, learning about Eastern medicine, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda and Tibetan medicine, as well as Western holistic approaches to medicine, which involve the power of the mind, the power of our beliefs, the power of the word, the placebo effect, biofeedback systems. And one of the classes involved a guest from Japan who demonstrated doing energy healing without even touching people, not even laying his hands on the people he was practicing on. And he did maybe 10 or so healings in front of a class of 50, 60 people. Mm-hmm. And half the people didn't even believe it. They were skeptical of what was going on. But I saw it and I was like, oh my God, this is something that I've always been waiting my whole life to see something like this. I've always been interested in spirituality.
I'm like all excited over here because I live for this shit. It's just where I hang out. I'm like, yeah, this is what we do, because we're just so powerful. We have yet to, as a collective, access that power that is within all of us. And that's why this is called true nature. This is our true nature. This.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not something special. It's not like a special gift that this man had from Japan named Muromatsu, Muromatsu-san. I owe a great deal of gratitude to Dr. Eric Pepper, P-E-P-E-R. He is one of the heads of the holistic health program at San Francisco State, and he chose to bring in this healer and demonstrate what energy healing is. And that's a unique experience for somebody to have in college. And it changed the course of my life because one of the things Muromatsu-san said was, you don't need to be born with a special gift in order to do this. Anybody can learn how to do this. And the closest thing related to what I do is something called Reiki. And you can learn how to do Reiki. And it was that very moment where I declared to myself in my inner world, I'm going to learn how to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn how to do Reiki. I don't know how, but I'm going to find a teacher. And through synchronicities in the following days, it was presented to me. I bumped into somebody that gave me that I overheard talking about Reiki, and he ended up giving me a folder full of information about Reiki, and even showed the symbols, Reiki. Like, I was like given basically a huge download of the system of Reiki. And then I soon after pursued finding a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I had two female teachers who showed me how to lay hands upon myself and upon others. And I received a Reiki attunement, and it really opened my sensitivities. I began to feel energies with the palms of my hands, and my voice really opened after receiving my Reiki attunement. I had this like operatic quality open in my voice, this like, oh, that was not there before. I didn't know how to do that. It just started coming through.
Okay, so now I know what part you sing on the Puma song.
No. Probably was actually listening to Alex's part.
Oh, okay. I was like, whoa.
He's the opera singer.
That's what I knew, but I was like, that sounded kind of opera. It was good.
Oh, yeah. That's Alex's voice you're probably referencing. But that's how it opened up, was through Reiki. My voice opened up. And I was drawn into energy healing at that point. So when I found myself in my own healing crisis, I had to implement all the tools that I had at the time. So Reiki, I believed in the healing power of Reiki because I had already seen Muromatsu-san perform instantaneous healings. Mm-hmm. And in reading about Reiki, it's like, you know, anything is possible as long as you trust and, you know,
I feel like it's really about belief. Like, you have to be a kid again with that innocence of just believing.
Yeah.
When my gifts really started to expand is when I believed without judging myself, without, it was like, I was removing all the shit that had been caked on. Like, we'll start with like Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, fairies, you know, all of that stuff, that imaginary friends, you know, when parents in society are like, that's not real. Imaginary mm-hmm. friends are beings that we interacted with at a young age. It's not that. Anyway, I digress.
Well, yeah. You know, it's like, I think what people don't realize is how when they don't believe in themselves, how it just collapses possibility.
Yeah, it contracts what's, you know, we only start to see in like a very small space rather than like seeing possibility, seeing that there are more options.
Yeah. And like, it's, to me, it's just common sense. Like if there's a person right in front of you performing an energy healing and you watch it happen and it works, that's, you know, that was an important moment for me because that was the foundation of my belief system. It's like, mm-hmm. well, I saw it happen with my own two eyes, so I can believe that.
Yeah, and like, I can't make this shit up, you know, happened.
And you know, like the mind is so tricky. It'll like want to, you know, make a story so that things like this aren't real. But that you look at all world traditions, indigenous cultures, it's real. There's names for mm-hmm. healing energy. in Quechua, in the Peruvian tradition that I'm trained in, there's names for healing energy. Mm-hmm. We have Anchai, that's the word for light. There's Sami, which is a word for this effervescent vibrational feeling that can be felt in the heart, the lightness of the heart, which would be called Sami Sonko, the bubbling effervescence of the heart. There's Sami Umai, the healing quality of mind, mm-hmm. Uma being mind. Kampik Anjai, healing light. So I'm naming these words to say, like, no, we're not just making this stuff up. You know, I have to sometimes when I speak to classes or groups, as soon as you break down the other languages, you know, in Hebrew, there's a ruach, spirit. In Sanskrit, it's prana. Chinese, it's chi. Mm-hmm. Japanese, it's ki.
So life force.
So it's something to tap into. Our mind can tap into. And so that's what, for me, was one of the greatest tools I was using, was invoking healing light in my body as I was laying in a hospital bed, totally paralyzed, trusting in the system that I had just learned recently. You know, what else am I going to do when I'm told that I'm going to be dependent upon others? I'll be a quadriplegic my whole life. You know, facing life in a wheelchair. Yeah, there was some fear there. Yet what I had learned from all my teachers before that was that in any given moment, we can tap into the healing power of the universe, which is infinite, and rest there, rest in that healing energy, and the body will begin to transform. The more frequently we can rest in that space with a smile on the face, gentle smile on the face, all of our organs respond, all of the chakras respond, and we have a chance to heal. And fortunately, all of the algorithms were there for me to have the healing experience with all the tools I was using, with sound and with Reiki and with the support that I had from family and friends.
Wow. I mean, that's where it's at, right? Is just believing. And sometimes it does take us to believe, to run out of the resources that we have been using that don't seem to work. And I found that for myself too. I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? Okay. All right. I surrender. I just have to believe. And when you get to that place, it's really humbling. Yeah. And it kind of catapults you into believing. It's almost like hitting rock bottom, you know, where it's like, okay, now what? What's left? I have spirit. I have my connection to God and universe, source, whatever you want to call it. And that's, I think that's like where our deep healing really comes from, is that connection.
Yeah. And I love that you said that word, surrender. That was one of the first times I was exposed to that word surrender, was when I was laying in the hospital bed. Mm-hmm. And one of my healers said, you have to surrender to this experience. And my first instinct was like, no, I'm not going to surrender to this. I'm going to fight this. I'm going to get through this.
And it kept
ringing in my ears. I have to surrender. And then it finally clicked in what that word means. Mm-hmm. The state of surrender. It's not a giving up. It's not saying, oh, I don't care. Surrender is the state of trust.
Mm-hmm. Trust.
And it's an effortless place, because you're, you know, that people say, let go and let God. It's like that, you know.
You're just not fighting what is, what needs to be at that moment.
Yeah, and the fact that that can be the remedy.
That's fucking true.
Sometimes.
Maru, I so appreciate your magic and the essence of who you are, and just the work that you're doing in the world and what you're transmitting, the healing that you're helping others go through, and offering that support just by being you. So where can people find you? How can they work with you? I know they can find you in the Berkeley area, but like, where can they find you online and your offerings and
online? You can find me at my website, firstwasthesound.com. I have links to some of my music and videos and services that I offer around opening the voice, healing sessions that I offer, healing journeys, longer extended sound journeys where I support the journey with sound. Firstwasthesound.com. You can also support me through Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/madhumusic, M-A-D-H-U, music, that's an excellent way to support me. I post videos and exclusive downloads on the Patreon page. If you want to hear the Puma song, the albums that I've done with Alex Kugler, you can find those on samibrothers.com, S-A-M-I, brothers.com. That song's on the album Chaskapunku. Means star portal.
Yeah. And Spotify. You guys are on Spotify.
We're on Spotify. A lot of my music's on Spotify under Sami Brothers, and as well as my name, Madhu Anciani. If you're interested in the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, learning more about that, you can contact me through my website. And one more thing, if you want to know more about my healing journey, I was featured in a book that was recently released called Energy Medicine by Jill Blakeway. I'm in chapter 9. The whole chapter 9 is written about me and my healing story. So if you're interested in learning more about what it took for me to overcome being quadriplegic, please check out her book. It's on Amazon. It's on Audible. Thanks a lot, Taj, for having me on.
Thank you, Madhu. Thank you so much. And yeah, you guys, intro, outro by Madhu and Alexander, the Swami Brothers. You guys can find them on Spotify. And and all the information that you shared, that's where you can connect with him. And thank you so much, Madhu.
Thanks again.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Please be sure to share episodes you love with those you know who would benefit. The intention here is to help as many people as possible. And don't forget to subscribe to the True Nature Podcast on iTunes and leave a rating and review. This pushes it to more people. The movement gets bigger. To find out more about spiritual life and business coaching with me and to sign up for the newsletter so you never miss an episode, please visit www.tajsavitri.com. Wishing you all a day full of magic. See you soon.